It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Ference is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Ference cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Ference Toth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference, and I am in Denver. Obviously, I get a lot of clients here. I've been coming to Denver for, a decade or more, working with clients. I used to speak to a number of investor groups here in the Denver area and lots of others, of course, around the country. But Denver's always been one of the best places for me to do business, meet people, and it's fun catching up with a lot of folks that I have, some of them I haven't seen for several years even. So it's great to be here, and thank you for allowing me to come in and record in studio. This is awesome. So as usual, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. I've been discussing a lot about inflation and the effects that it's having on the average American. You know, we've had a higher than average inflation. In fact, I think I shared in last week's show where if the inflation numbers were measured like they were in the 1970s, last year's inflation numbers were actually 18%, not 8 or 9 like the government was trying to claim, the government numbers. 18% inflation in 1 year is a tremendous high inflation level. And by the way, in 2023, the numbers were closer to 10%. Again, if they counted them like they did in the 70s. The government's trying to tell us inflation is only around 4%. Those are not the real numbers. We've discussed many times where food costs alone are up 25% in the last 3 years. You know, food is one of those things that you just almost just can't avoid. And by the way, this is whether you buy it and you eat it at home or go out to eat, the costs are up 25%. So it's not like you can just stop eating. Obviously, you can reduce your expenses. You could buy cheaper stuff, things like that. There's some things you can do. But to stop eating is, you know, obviously not much of an option for most people. So what I'm getting at is I'm seeing firsthand with a lot of clients the pinch that this inflation is having on people for the last couple of years or so now, 2-3 years. And it's causing some real difficult situations, some real difficult decisions that are having to be made with families and such. And I'm going to share a couple of thoughts on these because, well, it's becoming so commonplace. And sadly, I truly believe, unfortunately, it's going to get worse, not better. You know, I know a lot of the media and Wall Street was saying for a while, you know, they've been pushing for interest rates to go down. They want them to go down. I mean, Wall Street wants them to go down, of course, because, well, that's good for business. It's good for the stock market, lower interest rates, typically. We understand why they want them to go down, but you have to listen to the Federal Reserve. And if you've listened to my show any period of time, you know, I was a chairman of the board of the bank for a couple of years. I understand banking a lot more than most people. I'm not totally an expert, but more than most, I'll put it that way. And it's interesting how in the financial industry, how little cross-pollination there really is between, say, the financial world, investing, stuff like that, and the banking world, and how different they really are. There aren't many people that have a good understanding of both. I've been fortunate, blessed, if you will. I've had experience on both sides of the coin. But when it comes to interest rates, for example, there's a couple things going on. And one is you have to listen to the Fed. The Federal Reserve is who sets interest rates, you know, and they have been saying repeatedly and consistently, higher for longer. You have to listen to what they're saying. I know what people want. I know what Wall Street wants. But listen to who actually is going to enact the policy, and that's the Federal Reserve. Expect higher for longer. The reason why, the primary reason why, the number one reason why is excess government spending. And when I say that, a lot of people kind of understand it, but they don't fully grasp why. You see, when the government spends more than it receives, deficit spending is what it's called. They print money. Most people understand that, but it's not a full understanding of what's really going on. They can't just print money willy-nilly and put it out in circulation. What the government has to do is they have to sell bonds against the currency. So it goes to the bond offering is what they call it. The Treasury Department sells bonds on the bond market several times a year. There's a host or a company that handles it, I guess I should say, handles the bond offering. They're given parameters in terms of what interest rates they can offer for the various terms because, you know, there's short-term bonds, there's long-term bonds, you know, terms up to 30 years, for example. The company that's offering, that's sponsoring it, can only offer up to a certain interest rate. Well, the last bond offering, most recent one we had, 25% of the bond offering, they had maxed out all the terms. In fact, that's where we saw the 30-year fixed at 5%, for example. It's backed off from that a little bit since. But it was because at the bond offering, nobody would buy the bonds until they offered the maximum available. And even then, they couldn't sell 25% of the bond offering. The host had to buy that part of their fee. What do they have to do? They're on the hook, so to speak. So they ended up having to buy that. Now, I'm not 100% certain about this, but I do not believe that's happened before. Certainly, it doesn't happen very often. It's very, very rare that they're at a bond offering, the Treasury Department's not able to sell all the bonds they're offering. Now, why are they having problems selling all the bonds? Because they're offering too many, too much. Basic supply and demand. That's economics 101. When you have a lot of something, you know, the price goes down or you have to sweeten the interest rate to get bond buyers to buy it. Let me give you a few numbers to help you understand this a little better. If we use last year's numbers, fiscal 2022, the government spent $6.1 trillion. They brought in $4.4 trillion of tax revenue, which means they spent $1.7 trillion more than they received. That's called deficit spending. The government had to sell $1.7 trillion of bonds to put that money into the currency, into the system. They also, that's not the end of it, though. We all know the federal government has well over $30 trillion of debt currently. It's increasing at about $1 trillion every 100 days. That's unsustainable, folks. That will not continue forever. When a bond expires, so again, they're selling bonds anywhere from a few months to 30 years and every term in between, okay? When a bond expires, you know, they when it's sold, they pay a certain interest rate to whoever the buyer is. So it's a set interest rate for the term. So if it's a 10-year bond, you know, or 2-year bond or a 30-year bond, whatever, it's a set interest rate that the buyer receives from the U.S. government, from the Treasury Department, technically. When that term expires, the government has to resell the bond at the new interest rate. They don't pay down the debt, they just resell the bond. The problem the government's facing now is interest rates are far higher now than they were, say, a couple years ago. So they're having to sell these bonds that are expiring, the terms expiring, at a much higher rate. They're having to offer a much higher interest rate to the bond buyers to get them to buy it. Again, there's over $30 trillion of debt. Every year, a certain percentage of that debt expires, or those bonds expire, and it rolls over, is the term, and they got to resell it. Let's assume it's 10%. That's probably conservative. I don't know what the percentage is. I don't think the government tells you. I don't think they tell anyone. But let's say it's 10%. That means they're selling about $3 trillion or over $3 trillion of bonds every year. They're just rolling over from existing debt, plus adding the $1.7 trillion in excess spending from last year. So that would be over 5.7, close to 6 trillion, let's say, estimated bonds that were sold in the bond market last year. In 2023 fiscal year, it's going to be higher because it's estimated the deficit spending is about 2.5 trillion. So again, if they roll over, say, 3 trillion or so, and that's increasing from existing debt, and they sell another 2.5 trillion of new debt, that's going to be like 5.5 trillion of debt bonds that'll have to be sold. Somebody's going to have to buy them. With that, and that's a significant increase. Each year they've been selling more and more, spending more, selling more bonds. The last year's numbers were all-time records, and this year's going to be even higher. The bond buyers are getting too much. There's not enough demand. What that'll do is it'll force the government to offer higher and higher interest rates to sell these bonds. That's going to push interest rates up. That's why the Fed is saying higher for longer. That's one of the reasons, folks. Until the federal government stops spending more than they receive, there is going to be pressure on bond returns, bond interest rates, which also affect greatly interest rates. So I wish that interest rates were going down, but there's no signs of that, and probably the opposite. There was an article in Vanguard recently that stated they expect bond interest rates to increase for the next 5 to 10 years. This creates an opportunity, by the way, because as interest rates continue to climb on bonds, you can invest in dividends, high cash value policies like we talk about that pay dividends that are interest rate sensitive. all the companies are saying the same thing. Dividends are on the rise. They're paying 6% insured guaranteed tax-free right now. Don't forget, tax-free is a big deal. Meeting with some folks today in Denver, you know, they're in the 25, 33% tax brackets. You know, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, for example, state and federal, a 6% tax-free return is the same as an 8% taxable return. Because if you make 8% and it's taxable and you're in the 25% bracket, you keep 6%, don't you? So a 6% tax-free competitive, depending on your tax bracket, absolutely. When you add it's insured with guarantees, that's powerful too. When you add the fact that it's likely going to increase returns, dividends for the next 5 to 10 years, they'll likely be increasing. Certainly could be longer than that, could be higher than that. Depends on what the federal government decides to do regarding spending, which is out of control. We're going to talk about that some more today, by the way, and some solutions. But the thing is, you get opportunity. Opportunity presents itself from the financial irresponsibility of the federal government. The excess spending creates an opportunity. You have an asset that likely is going to be increasing in returns for the next decade. Now, when do you buy? Buy low, sell high, right? All that kind of good stuff. Which is going to lead me to some stories I'm going to share in the next segment that I think you're going to find are extremely valuable and important, because this is real world. These are real people. This is real life. And folks, it's not going on just in Denver, like where I am right now, but it's happening across the country to average Americans, normal people who are doing nothing more than trying to live their lives, raise their families, build their business or their career. They're trying to do the right thing, but it's becoming more and more difficult. And it's becoming more and more difficult because our federal government, our representatives, the bureaucrats, the people that are in charge, refuse, and I mean absolutely refuse, to employ any financial discipline, responsibility of any kind whatsoever. And that is where I have an issue. That's where the problem is. Stay tuned in the next segment. I'm going to discuss some stories about what's going on, how to deal with it, and then we're going to get into some stuff about taxes, so you don't want to miss it.
Are you concerned about the direction our country is headed and how it may affect your money? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Your Personal Bank provides a place to grow your money safely with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This keeps your money safe, and you can take advantage of opportunities regardless of the economic situation. For more information, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach out to me, you can contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. People are often surprised when they contact me there. I do my best to reach out to everybody that contacts me. And again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So a 2023 survey just come out, conducted by payroll.org, highlighted that 78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. By the way, that's up almost 10% from a year ago. Auto loan delinquencies have now hit a 13-year high. That's in 2024. That's the highest rate since the last quarter of 2010. If those of you don't remember what was going on in 2010, that was called the Great Recession, wasn't it? Student loan debt, by the way, and that's been a hot topic lately, but student loan debt is at $1.74 trillion, which is at or close to an all-time high, despite even the forgiveness that we're seeing often happening from the Biden administration. Year over year, hardship withdrawals from 401ks are now up 36%, much, much higher than the average. Now, those are the statistics. Let me give you one more statistic, then I'm going to share some stories. So in December 2023, wages were reported to be up by 4.3% year over year, and the Biden administration was touting that, those kinds of numbers. But here's some things you need to understand. That's pre-tax wages. You see, by the time the average hardworking middle-class American pays federal, state, Social Security, Medicare tax, they're barely up 3% in real after-tax wages. Now, when you factor in inflation, year over year, most middle-class families are going backwards. What did the government say inflation was in 2023? about 4%. So according to government numbers even, the average American, if they got a 4.3% raise in 2023 over the previous year, they really got about a 3% raise after tax. And if inflation was 4%, they really lost 1% buying power, didn't they? But the real numbers, that's not the real numbers. As I stated earlier, if inflation, CPI, was counted like it was in the 70s, last year's 2023 numbers, inflation was about 9-10%. If it was at 9% even, you got a 4% raise, 3% after tax. Inflation is 9. That means you lost 6% last year. And that's if you got a 4% raise. That's 1 year. And 2023 was not the worst year for inflation, as we all know. 2022 is far worse. The government says 8%. The real numbers show 18% just in 2022. My point is this. The average American, the middle class, is moving backwards due to inflation. Inflation is an insidious, hidden tax. It's maybe one of the worst. I've heard some people even discuss that. And in that respect, they're correct. It's one of the worst taxes because it impacts the middle class and the lower income folks the most. When you discuss things like food costs going up 25% over the last 3 years, obviously it affects the lower income folks the most because they're spending more of their money on food percentage-wise than somebody with a higher income. Now, let me share a few stories I've had with folks here just in Denver this week. So I had one gentleman, younger guy, doing well, working in his career. There was a period of time a couple of years ago that both his wife and him were in school getting master's degree, advanced degrees, so their income completely stopped. They also had a baby at the time, so they had additional expenses, and inflation was hitting them. Now you start to think about how they manage all that. Well, here's the good news. About 7 years ago, I met them here in Denver at a workshop I did, and we helped them set up a personal bank policy, high cash value policy, earning dividends, growing, and they had been putting money in it while they were working, building a nest egg. Now here's the beauty of all what happened. When they lost both of their incomes, of course, it was intentional because they were getting advanced degrees. Then they had the baby with the additional expenses. How did they manage to pay the bills, expenses? Well, a lot of it came from they were able to access funds from their policy in tax-free without any penalties, no issue whatsoever, and that helped them get through that period of time when they needed that income to live on. Now, since then, fast forward a couple of years. They're both working again, making good incomes, all that stuff. He likes to play. He's a trader. He plays in the stock market. A lot of people do that, doing some options and stuff. Nothing on a huge level, per se. He doesn't sit in front of a computer screen all day. He's got a full-time job, right? The average American, they don't have time to sit in front of a computer and be a day trader. I mean, there's some people out there that do that. I've met very few who've been successful at it, to be fair. But my point is he buys stocks, options, various things. Holds them for a few months, a few weeks, few months, whatever. Your typical casual trader. There's a lot of people out there like that. Now, last year, the markets, particularly in the tech area, did extraordinarily well. It wasn't expected by a lot of people, including himself, but he surprisingly did rather well. Of course, the markets, particularly the tech stocks, have hit, many people consider, extreme levels at our all-time highs. We'll put it that way. And he was asking me, he was getting nervous about it. He was concerned. Now, I'm not here to give stock advice to people or anything. What I try to do is help people make financial decisions, financial literacy and solid financial decisions that make sense. So I shared with him, you're stock trading. Obviously speculative. He understood that. I always say, if you're going to do something like that, I'm not saying not to do it. What I'm saying is don't do it with any money that you can't afford to lose. Much like if you went to Vegas or something, right? If you go gambling, you might do it for fun, but don't gamble don't gamble the mortgage, right? Obviously, okay. Don't gamble your future. If something happens and you win, you get a win, great. If you lose it, yeah, it kind of stinks, but it's not the end of the world, right? So that's where he's at. Well, he's had a windfall, so to speak. He's done really well, better than he expected with some of these tech stocks, but he's concerned now. He's worried. And I said, And we talked about how much he started with, how much he had now. And I said, what if you did this? This is a great principle. Gamblers use this. Speculators use this. What if you took your principal off the table? In other words, sold those positions and got back out the money you started with. Well, what does that do? Well, you're now playing with house money, right? Or paper money at that point. The gains on paper, because he hasn't cashed out yet, he hasn't sold the positions. Obviously, they're not actually realized yet because he hasn't sold them. They're paper gains. Please understand that when you're looking at a piece of paper and you see a statement, I share this with people all the time. Doesn't mean that's what it's going to be. It's actually worth to you. You got to figure out what's worth to you after tax, certainly, one. But two, it's not really worth that until you actually close it out, access it, sell it, whatever, right? I mean, it's paper gains until you cash it out. He understood that. And he liked the idea because I said, bottom line is if you take the principal, what you started with, your contribution off the table, now you're playing with house money. You're just playing with the paper gains. So, you know, ideally you don't lose it all. That would stink. But if you did, you didn't lose any money overall. He goes, you know, that's really good advice. Because the longer you, Wall Street says this, Vegas says the same thing. They have a saying there that says if you play long enough, they will win. And the mistake I see people make, both the market, to be fair, that are speculating, I'm not talking about the investors who are, and please understand, I'm not talking about investors who are buying stocks, hanging on to them for years or decades even, and building wealth long-term. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about here is the people that are trading, the people that are buying options and shorter terms, they're speculating. Okay, they're speculators. They're not, I don't want to offend anybody, but you're not an investor, okay? You're a speculator. And there's a lot of people out there that do that. And I know there's some people out there that say you shouldn't speculate and all that. Well, here's a guy who can do it. He enjoys it. He's had some success with it. He's had some losses too, but he's okay with it. And there's a lot of folks out there that are doing that kind of thing. And I think rather than putting our head in the sand, we should address the real world. Well, how can he take the stress off worrying about it? He's made some gains on paper, certainly, and rather good ones. And he's getting a little nervous about it because it's gone up so much. Again, taking the principal off, out, getting your contribution out. Now you're playing with house money. Takes the pressure off. And that really, it's like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. And then put it into something you know it's going to grow. And look, if it's going to grow insured, guaranteed, tax-free, he's already got personal bank policies that have been doing really well for him too. He says, yeah, I think I'll just take that money out and do some more there because then I can lock that in and grow for the future and build for my retirement. And I said, exactly. That's my point. So when you get a windfall, why not put something into it where you can lock it in, know it's there, know it's going to grow. Hey, you took a risk, you won. I see this with entrepreneurs all the time too. You know, entrepreneurship has great rewards, also has sometimes great risk. I've been an entrepreneur myself for about 30 years in various businesses. I've shared this on the show many, many times. I own the financial agency that I've owned here for the last 20 plus years. I've had successes. I've had some failures, like most entrepreneurs do. We understand that's part of the game. We make calculated risk. And when we win, when an entrepreneur wins, it's typically not. I met with a gentleman literally right before recording the show. He's an entrepreneur himself, self-employed. He says, you know, I've thought about this. And the thing I've thought, you know, I've tried real estate investing. I've tried investing in the market. I've tried different things. This is another thing I run into all the time. And I've had varying levels of success. But my problem is, like you said, I have a hard time staying focused on it. I'm busy with my business. And I keep going back to that because that's what actually makes me money. I said, exactly. This is what I tell entrepreneurs and career folks who are doing well. What's your economic engine? What's your money? What's your engine? What drives, what generates income for you? And if you're good at it and you enjoy it, and he does, he loves his business. I said, focus there. Put your focus in what actually works for you. By the way, yes, does real estate work and it has worked for a lot of people throughout history and have a lot of people grown wealth from real estate? Absolutely. With the stock market? Absolutely. But do you know the number one way that Americans throughout history have built wealth? Entrepreneurship. That's number one, folks. Always has been. My point is, if that's your driver, your money driver, your economic engine, if you will, focus on that. So that's why I focus on what I do. And then if you put your money away, like you said, you know, I'd love to just put it away somewhere. I don't have to think about it. I just know it's there. I know it's going to grow. I don't have to pay any taxes on it. And I know I can access it if I need it. Well, the personal bank policy is perfect for that. You can be a passive investor. Know it's there. Not worry. with guarantees, tax-free, highly liquid. And then if you have opportunity, you want to build your business or invest in something, you can. You know it's there. Your personal bank can do that kind of thing. Stay tuned in the next segment. I'm going to share a couple more stories, I think, from this week in Denver. Great city, and I have a lot of great clients here, and I've always loved Denver. But I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned in the next segment. I'm going to share a couple more stories and then some information about taxes I don't think you're going to want to miss.
Are you prepared if we fail to avoid a recession? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Most of the leading economic indicators show we are headed for recession. Your personal bank earns dividends with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This protects you from the downside risk and allows you to take advantage of opportunities in a changing economy. For more info, contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome to Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference, and if you want to contact me, yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will get a hold of me, Ference. I often get people surprised that I answer my phone or respond to. Like I said, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com if you want more information. I've been sharing some stories about what's going on, real world stuff that's going on right now. And the inflation that we've been dealing with for the last 2-3 years is starting to really cause a pinch and make life difficult financially for a lot of people. I'm going to share another story. I met with a gentleman yesterday, and he was sharing with me a close friend of his. And they have a family, and he has a pretty good paying job. I guess their expenses are fairly high. They bought a house not too long ago, stuff like that. Got into a place they wanted, but probably, to be fair, probably paid a little more than they should have. But, it was the house they wanted to live in and stuff. Here in Denver, it's a fairly high cost of living place. And due to the cost of going up to have a family, all these things, the bottom line, they've determined that the husband has decided to take on a part-time job, weekends, evenings. In addition to his full-time job, his wife also was a stay-at-home mom, is now taking, got a three-quarters job, so they can make ends meet. They're not doing this so they can buy a boat or take another vacation or anything like that. They're doing this so they can pay the bills. I shared some of the statistics before. Credit card debt is at all-time highs. 401k hardship withdrawals, up 36% over last year. Auto loan delinquencies hit a 13-year high. These things are not happening because people are wasting their money and doing stupid stuff. These things are happening because people are feeling the pinch of food prices going up 25% in 3 years. Housing prices going up 40 and 50% in the last 3 or 4 years. Try buying a house versus 4 years ago. Your income you needed to buy the average house in America 4 years ago was $59,000. Today it's $109,000. That's according to Zillow. That's just in 4 years. How many people you know that were making the average income 4 years ago, by the way, it was about $59,000. How many people you know that were in that boat today have gotten a $10,000 a year raise every year for the last 4 years? The answer is very few, which means when it comes to housing, they've gone backwards. Sadly, home ownership has slipped away for a lot of Americans, particularly younger Americans, lower income Americans. It's sad. But the story I wanted to share with you, I think so valuable here, is this husband's taking on a part-time job. The wife's taking on a three-quarter time job. They have young children. And I had a simple question. He asked me what advice I would give if I was to talk to those people. To be honest, I don't know if he was asking for himself or for a friend. But I didn't want to go there. You know what I'm trying to say? I don't know. But I shared with him, honestly, what I would say, whether it was him or his friend, because I am running into this often. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that's happening due to the reckless spending our federal government has been doing for several years now and causing higher and higher inflation. And my question was this. If you're going to do this for, you could do this for a short period of time. I mean, you can do anything for a short period of time if you're trying to fix something or right the ship, so to speak, so you oversteer, if you know what I'm trying to say, because things are out of whack, right? But if you're listening to the media and Wall Street telling you that interest rates are going to go down soon, the economy is going to get better soon, and you're counting on all that, I'd be concerned. I'd be hesitant. I'd proceed with caution. In other words, you need to ask the question, how long are you going to do this? Is it worth it? Is it worth the life? There's a life balance here too, right? That has to come into play. They're a family. They have young children. Those are things that are extreme. Money's important. Don't get me wrong. This is a financial show. I'm a financial guy, okay? But money's not the most important thing in life. I've learned that. I hope others do. And financial stress, by the way, also can be one of the worst stresses for a family, for a marriage. We all know that. Something like they say 50% of all divorces are caused due to financial issues. So money's a big issue. It's not the most important, but it is important. You really have to ask yourself the question, are things going to get better? What is it that's going to get better that's going to allow you to stop working the second job? You know, there's really three options, right? You have to increase income. When you have a money crunch like they do, clearly, they're not doing that for their health or by choice. You can either increase income, you can reduce expenses, or you do a little both. Sometimes some of those things can be rather easy. Sometimes it can be rather difficult. You just have to address those. And one of the things I share with people a lot when I meet with them, people ask me this all the time, and one of the statements I'll make is, do you want me to tell you what you want to hear or what you need to hear? Now, I say it with a smile. I say it with all love in my heart as I can. I'm not trying to shove it down people's throats. But I'd also believe that if I don't tell you the truth, I'm doing you a disservice. And that's what I would say to these people. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I know there are probably not a few. There's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people listening to my voice right now because this show airs nationally. It's coast to coast, folks. You know, we're on over 20 radio stations. We're on social media, Spotify, all those other places across the country. So I know there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people listening to this right now that are dealing with some of the same issues. Their expenses have now gone above their income, mostly due to inflation. They're not wasting it. They're not being extravagant. They're just trying to pay the bills. So what I would say is, and you know, as this discussion we had with this gentleman, he was like, yeah, but if they, you know, making more income, you know, he's got a pretty good job now where he's going to find another one that pays more, you know, that in his situation, that was probably going to be difficult. So then reducing expenses will also equally difficult unless he moved out of Denver because Denver is a high cost of living place. And I said, that may be the solution. I know they bought this house because they loved it a few years ago. But if it's going to kill you financially, isn't it better to pull the trigger now while you still have the better, more options, maybe a little more money in reserve still, than later when you're going to get forced to if things don't change? You see what I'm trying to say? We've said this all the time with real estate investing, for example. You never have a rental property. You know, John Burley, I've interviewed him a number of times on this show, and he always says this constantly. A rental property has to cash flow, period. You know, do not ever go for appreciation because that's speculative. He's right. If a rental property doesn't cash flow, it's not a good investment. Well, when you're talking about your income and expenses and they're out of whack and you might have to make some serious decisions to correct the situation. These are not fun discussions to have with people, by the way. I take no joy in this when I have to sit down with somebody, go over their numbers, go over their budget, go over their situation, and tell them the truth. But again, I have clients I've done that with years ago in similar situations. I'm sharing these stories, some of these situations, because I often get people asking me, what do you do? What is it? I mean, I get the personal bank concept and you share us with his insured guaranteed tax-free monies and you can create positive cash flow and you have high liquidity and dividends are increasing, all those things. Those are all great. But when you actually meet with somebody, what do? So that's why I'm trying to kind of pull the veil back a little bit. And some of the client meetings I've just had just in the last few days, some of these are actual clients I've worked with for a number of years. Some are people I've just met and we're just looking at their situations. I got one more. gentleman I met where he said he received a severance package, a chunk of money. You know, this happens not too unoften. You know, I've run into people where they get a chunk of money in for whatever. They sold a house or they got a severance package or whatever, and they're not sure what to do with it because they're not necessarily stock market investors or gurus. You know what I'm saying? They're concerned about where the markets are at. They're concerned where the economy is at. They're not somebody who's going to watch over their ass. Like the one gentleman, he said, I retired. I just want to enjoy my life now. I want to put my money away somewhere where I know it's going to grow. I don't have to worry about it too much. Have access to it, do it when I need to. And I said to him, you're describing a personal bank policy. Okay? That's what that does. Look, if you're into watching the markets and investing and trading and doing all those things, that's fine. That's one thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing or I'm against it. But what I'm telling you is I find most people, easily 80%, I'll put it that way, the vast majority, just want to live their lives, enjoy their families, build their careers, travel some, you know, enjoy live life, right? They don't want to sit there and pore over financial statements or research stocks or businesses or, you know, I'm saying real estate properties. And I'm not saying those are bad things. Some people enjoy that. Nothing wrong with that. And I got plenty of clients that are what I call active investors and do those things. But I also have plenty of folks who are what I call passive investors who are living their life, doing other stuff, and they just want to know the money's there and grow. And they want to have access to it, minimize taxes, all that stuff. Well, if that's the case on either of those, by the way, active or passive investor, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. I'll share with you how it can really enhance your financial situation. Stay tuned in the last segment. I'm going to share some tax stuff. It's, you know, tax day is really around right here. So we need to discuss some things on that. So don't miss it.
When people contact me, they often ask, what exactly do you do? And yes, if you contact me, I, Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show, will respond, not an assistant. I help people increase their returns, reduce taxes, increase positive cash flow, and reduce market risk. I accomplish your goals using various financial tools, including your personal bank. If you have questions or would like to discuss your situation, contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. And if you want to reach me, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me, yourpersonalbank.com. So I've been sharing some stories today, real world stuff, things that I've been dealing with people this last week here in Denver. Love the city of Denver, the people in it. Been here many, many times over the last decade. I have lots of clients here. I used to speak here regularly to a lot of investor groups. Just like love Denver a lot, okay? So thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it. But some of the stories I've been sharing, just like I said, folks I've met with here in Denver, just everyday folks. Some are making more, some are making less, but, you know, they're not the top 1%. Some are doing pretty good, pretty close to that. And then they're not the bottom 20% either, okay? They're the middle swath, if you will, the vast majority of people. There's a lot of stuff going on that are impacting people today. Inflation is eating away at the buying power, and a lot of people are feeling the pinch. And those that had a situation, and by the way, this doesn't affect the lower-income folks strictly. It actually, in fact, I've got people that make several hundred grand a year, and they're feeling the impacts, the effects, because it's not the amount of money that they're making. It's the amount of they're making compared to their expenses. In other words, I met doctors who make $400,000 and $500,000 a year and they're broke, okay? Because they're spending as much or more than they make. It's not what you make, it's what you keep, right? You got to have a balance. You got to have a balance there. If you're earning a certain amount of income, you got to make sure that your spending is something less than that. And the bigger the gap you can make, the better you're going to be off financially, the less stress you're going to have in your life financially, the bigger gap you can create between income and expenses. That's basic common sense, but it's financial literacy, but and it's amazing how few people actually live it. You know, federal government, of course, does the opposite. My point is, and then what I'm trying to say is when inflation, the reason you want that gap, that cushion, that difference, and you want to build some reserves and have access to it without taxes and penalties and stuff is what happens when expenses go up out of your control, like inflation. And some people were living a little too close to the vest. Their income and expenses were too tight. And now when something changes, they're in trouble. And it doesn't matter if you're making 50 grand a year or 500 grand a year, they're in trouble. So changes, decisions, some tough decisions and sometimes have to be made. And that's the things I help people do oftentimes. But then the last thing I want to share here is this last bit of spending. A lot of people weren't paying attention to this because I think part of the reason is they're just fed up. But the federal government just spent this last week or so another $1.7 trillion in an omnibus spending bill. It's filled with a bunch of pork. We already have debt that's increasing $1 trillion every 100 days. This last bit of spending will bring the deficit spending or increase the debt by approximately $2.5 trillion more this year. So plus the interest and such on the debt is increasing the overall debt by $1 trillion every 100 days. So it's just piling on. It's throwing gas on the fire. It's making things worse. In fact, the borrowing now is about the amount of spending annually. It's crazy. In other words, they're borrowing about as much as they're spending every year now. The government's bringing in, I don't know, $4.4 trillion last year. Okay, they're going to spend about $7 trillion roughly, something like that. $2.5 trillion more, right? At least two-thirds, it's crazy. It's just out of control, okay? Forget the numbers. It's out of control, and it's unsustainable. I don't think our politicians have the political will to make a difference, either party. I mean, we need to vote people in who are fiscally responsible. That's the bottom line. Ultimately, it comes down to the American people. Are we going to do that or not? Otherwise, the people we have up there now are just going to spend us in oblivion. I've heard people say just driving us off a financial fiscal cliff. They're right. Unfortunately, at the pace they're going, by the way, they're accelerating. They're like adding, we're headed to a cliff, a financial cliff. And they're accelerating the accelerator. They're pushing the gas harder. They're going faster. Why would they do that? It makes no logical sense. Its bottom line is they're looking at what benefits them personally, but not the country or their representatives or the people they're representing, I should say. That's the bottom line. But this bill increases customs and border protection by $3.2 billion over last year's. It includes almost $500 million for additional Border Patrol agents. You would think that would be a positive, but based on what the Biden administration has been having border agents do, I don't see it as a positive. They're being nothing more than travel agents facilitating illegals entering the country. It just means we got more welcome greeters. So what? So what? They hire more border agents. If they don't enforce the laws, who cares? By the way, interestingly, this bill spends a lot more money than last year, yet no money for the border wall. None whatsoever. That's not important. It does fund every non-governmental organization that supports illegal immigration. So it's going to just continue to facilitate and bring more people here. Increases the Department of Defense spending by $26 billion. Just what we need. More money for more war. Yay. Increases funding for Head Start and child care $1 billion more. Hey, what's another billion when you owe over $30 trillion, right? There's $200 million for the FBI News Headquarters Project. Been proven the FBI has been illegally spying on U.S. citizens, yet they get another $200 million for a new headquarters. Sure, why not? You're doing illegal stuff and you get rewarded by more money. Sounds fair to me. Sounds like a status quo for Washington. Here's a good one. Centers of Disease Control and Prevention are going to get a $4.5 million increase. Remember, they're the ones that basically screwed up the COVID response, right? Badly. So, they screw everything they said has now been proven wrong, and they get rewarded by extra funding. There's no incentive to do anything right up there. In fact, if you do it wrong, you get more. That's the Washington way. And of course, like most omnibus packages, it's an over 1,000-page bill, by the way, of spending. And they had they were given a day or two, to read it and pass it. Of course it did. All the Democrats voted for it. They just love spending money. And about half the Republicans, the rhinos. Pay attention to that. If your representative voted for this monstrosity of spending while we have all-time record debt, please vote against them next time they come up for re-election. for all our sake, yours and mine and everybody else's that lives in this country. That should be a priority. But here's some of the pork. $10 million to Alaska Museum for Political Figures. Wow, that seems important. $850,000 for a gay senior home. Wow, I'm glad my tax dollars are going to that. $15 million to pay for Egyptians' college tuitions. Why Egyptians? You know, why not other people? Well, why are we paying for it all? We're already broke. We're in debt. $400K for a gay activist group to teach elementary kids about being trans. I'm a Christian. That sounds great. Love seeing my money go to something like that. Love this one. $500K for a DEI zoo. Boy, that sounds important. $400K for a group to give clothes to teens to help them hide their gender. Yeah, that's real valuable. I believe in that one a lot as a Christian. $1.5 billion additional green energy funding, as if we hadn't had enough of that already. $300 to $500 million to the Ukraine secretary. Gee, I wonder why that. You know, I wonder how much of that is getting kicked back in money laundering or campaign contributions, all that stuff. There was an amendment to this omnibus package that was proposed that would bar taxpayer funds to fly illegal immigrants to U.S. towns. Every single Democrat voted against it. Every single Republican, to their credit, voted for it. So, in other words, our taxpayer dollars we get to pay for airline flights for illegals to fly into our cities. No vetting. We have no idea who they are, where they come from, why they want to be here. Do they have nefarious or criminal activities they plan to do or have done? No idea. Sounds like a great use of my tax dollars and yours too. Just love that. Again, keep voting. If we want more of this stuff, just keep voting for the people that are up there that vote for this stuff. Look, if they voted against it, all credit to them. They can stay. Reelect them. Great. But if they understand, 3/4 of them voted for all this stuff. All the Democrats, half the Republicans. Can we please get rid of these people that want to continue wasting our money, paying for museums in Alaska to political people or flying illegal immigrants into our country? By the way, how many airline tickets, flights have you, as the federal government, paid for you as a U.S. citizen? Personally, mine is zero. And how many of you are going to go visit this museum to political figures in Alaska? If it was up there, I can assure you that would be not make the list. In the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, here's what it says. It says the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, to pay debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Now, you try to explain to me how tax dollars going to illegal immigrants being flown from whatever country directly into ours without any vetting or anything else, how does that provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States? How does a Alaskan Museum for Political Figures provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States? How about a gay activist group teaching elementary kids how to be trans or sending $300 to $500 million to the Ukraine secretary? Is that providing for the common defense and general welfare of the United States? See, my point is, most of this spending is unconstitutional. It's immoral. It's not correct. And I saw a quote recently that basically said it's immoral. I think it was a Jefferson quote. Yeah. They said it was immoral to require citizens to pay for things that they felt was immoral. Something to that effect. I'll find that quote and I'll maybe bring it up next week's show. But it is. I find it disgusting, immoral, degrading. You know, taxes are due soon, right? For most people. And a lot of people get frustrated about that, and rightly so. And why are they frustrated? Well, because they see their money being wasted. They see their money going to causes and things that they vehemently disagree with. We work hard for our money. This isn't like it grows on trees, right? You work hard for your money too. I know I do. And it's blood, sweat, and tears. It's time. It's your, literally, for most people who earn an income, it's your life. It's literally time. You can't replace that. Trading time for dollars, right? Now, investments, you know, that's, you know, can make money on money and stuff like that. That's great. And you should do as much of that as you can. But unfortunately for most people, they can't live off of that yet. trying to get there. That's what we all work towards, right? My point is simple, and I'm farther along that path than I was before and making progress. And your personal bank can help you do that, of course. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com if you want more information. But my point is, you work hard. You pay all these taxes. Some of it's taken out of your, if you work, you know, out of your paycheck, if you have a job, let's say. And it's going to pay for illegal immigrants, their food and clothing and housing, or flying them here, or going to the Ukraine, or any number of, Alaskan museums, and any other stuff that's just a waste. No wonder people are getting frustrated. I don't blame them. When will Americans say enough is enough and get the right people up there and stop wasting our money? There's something in our country's history called taxation without representation. You know, that was one of the primary causes of the revolution. There were others. Do you remember in your history about throwing tea into a harbor in Boston? Why did they do that? Well, at that time, we weren't a country yet. We weren't the United States yet. They were still British citizens. Tea is very important to Brits. Still is today. And they decided to tax it, and they got very upset about that, and rightly so, because they didn't have any say-so in that. My point is simple, and I've said this before, but I'm going to repeat and finish with this. You tell me how funding open borders, illegal immigration, sending money to non-governmental associations, the United Nations, all these, sending money to foreign aid, many times to countries that hate us, funding wars like Ukraine, Afghanistan and others that are just, what national security interest is there? What benefit did we see as a country? You know, these kinds of things, funding things like Planned Parenthood, which, by the way, do a lot of abortions and many people are against. Some are for it. I understand. Many are against. Why should our tax dollars, our hard-earned money, have to go to pay for these kind of things? Why should we have to fund all this excess and wasteful spending? That's my question. These are questions we need to address, and we need to demand our representatives to address these too, or they're just going to continue to do the same thing. Don't expect the ones that are there that voted for this stuff to change. They're not going to. They're either compromised in some way or bribed. It's pretty much, it's open knowledge. You have to replace them. So if they voted for war, voted for Ukraine, if they voted to not close the border, keep the border open, if they voted for nothing to stop the illegal immigration, if they voted for foreign wars, foreign aid, if they voted for deficit spending when we have record debt, vote for somebody else. Find a candidate that will hopefully try to do something different and do the right thing. If you want help, advice on managing this economic crisis that I believe is on the horizon, unless things change, you can thrive through this. You can, as I said in the first segment, you can take advantage of the opportunity created by the fiscal irresponsibility. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. As always, stay tuned to the Your Personal Bank show next week. And as long as it's on our money, in God we trust.
Financial literacy in America is almost non-existent. It's typically not taught in schools, the media, at work, or in the home. I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank show. If you would like me to speak to your investing group or an organization with a financial focus, please contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. My goal is to increase financial literacy and enhance your financial future. Again, it's 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Watch out, folks. There's a new city that never sleeps. It's called Obesity USA. Population 115 million and getting bigger by the day and night. Because in Obesity USA, there are so many reasons to stay awake. Things like work, constant access to technology and media, job hunting, lack of exercise, bills, anxiety, insomnia, hypertension, diabetes, stress eating, fat shaming, and more work. It's no wonder 1 in 3 people in Obesity USA can't sleep. But who would want to, when the fast food restaurants are open all night, too? Welcome to the state of America. Welcome to Obesity USA. To learn more, go to visitobesity.org. That's visitobecity.org. Brought to you by the Pennington Biomedical Research Foundation.
Somewhere around 400 feet off the ground, an RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. When I first got out, I felt like my whole life had been smooshed down to just medical appointments. I was going to occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. I'm not sure I would still be here if I didn't find the Friends and Wounded Warrior Project that I did. Because there was a long period after the injury where I really didn't understand why I was still here. I felt like I had lost everything. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.